are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there, how you doing? Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you're never alone. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver, and I'm also your host. And by now, you know me as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers. Our website is thecaregiverspodcast.com, and we are The Caregivers Podcast on Facebook. Over on Twitter, we are Caregivers Pod. We're also on LinkedIn and Instagram, but I don't do much with either of those. But so why bother telling you, right? Anyway, for those of you that don't know what we're doing here today, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. Now, before we get into the introduction of this week's guest, I just want to thank you all again for everything. We're not big, but we're growing, and big in numbers, but we're big in meaning, and we're big in, hell, I'm not going to lie to you, we're big in what this podcast means to me. The other day, I got a phone call from a friend of mine. Now, from a standpoint of, is the podcast growing? This may or may not count because I've known this person for years and they found the podcast because they already knew me, but they called me because of the podcast. This is a quite a long time friend of mine. I mean, not like lifelong, but, you know, 10 years ish. And she's struggling with taking care of her husband who has early onset dementia, and she's struggling with the decision to place her husband in a nursing care facility. And we talked about the whole process and the whole guilt angle of it. And I have this thing I call the caregiver gap, where it's guilt, anger, and then pro-per, where professional and personal family caregivers are working together in a collaborative, non-competitive, mutual appreciation, caring environment. And that's what she was seeking, although she didn't know those terms. And I said to her, I said, I won't use her name. I'll just call her Mary. I said, Mary, and that's not her name. I'm not being cute. Her name is not Mary. But I said, Mary, I really applaud what you're doing because I know the you that you are. And I know what a loving person you are. And if you're at this stage, I'm really happy that you're at this stage because I'd rather see you angry than guilty. What I mean by that is that, you know, guilt is just self-anger and anger is anger at others. And I also work this the opposite way when I tell the professional caregivers of the world that when family members and people that we're working with to care for a loved one get angry at us, it's really them saying, hey, I trust you enough in order to express myself this way without fear of being judged or retribution or whatever you want to call it. And the professional side of the world doesn't necessarily appreciate me telling them what an honor it is to have a family member angry at you. But I was very happy for Mary in the sense that she was going to sort of share the burden and also the blame, because inevitably things go wrong. Nothing goes as is planned. And in today's guest on the podcast, we talk a little bit about expectations and the litigious society that we're in, the litigious environment that we're in within our society. It's sort of a secondary even a quaternary. What would be fourth? I mean, it's wasn't the primary or even secondary theme of the podcast, but it did come up. And I like the concept of welcoming anger rather than guilt as you move towards the stage where you have a truly pro-per relationship. But here's what was beautiful about this. She called me and felt appropriate to call me because she had heard a couple of episodes of the podcast. And we stumbled onto something that was very meaningful to both of us. She had said, I'll call him Tom, and his name's not Tom, but I'll call him Tom. She said, Tom doesn't know me as Mary anymore. He just knows me as the lady that's always nagging him. When he wants to go outside, I don't let him go outside. When he wants to lay in bed, I make him get up and get dressed. When he, you know, when he's relaxing on the couch, I make him go to the bathroom before we go to bed, and, you know, anticipatory type of needs and reactionary type of things to keep him safe. And he doesn't know me as Mary anymore. He just thinks of me as this, you know, sort of antagonistic personality that is always telling him what to do. And I said, well, Mary, that's the thing that I'm excited about, because not only do you get to move along the path of the guilt, anger, proper caregiver's gap path that I described, you also, I'm going to bet you a dollar to a donut that in the near future, while you are having professionals, for lack of a better word, nag your husband, you can simply visit with him, and he can eventually move away from that sort of association of you and negativity, and he can start to re-embrace the you and the positivity that you've had for your 30 to 40 year marriage. And I'm very excited for you. And she said, oh, but he's gone. Yeah, he might be gone in the traditional sense, but what I keep learning from all of my guests on the podcast, Daniel C. Potts told me this very profoundly. Gary LeBlanc tells me the same thing, is that they're in there. The person you loved and have known is in there. Give it time and they'll come out. Relax the anxiety and the tension and the, to use the word I use, the distorted thinking, and let, you know, meet him halfway, and he will find you and you will find him. And I'm going to give you an update on the podcast one day that I'm going to predict that shortly after everything settles down, her husband's, because they have long-term memory better than, you know, short-term, her husband is going to reboot or default or return or whatever the term might be, reset to thinking of you in a positive sense instead of the negative association of the caregiver nagging, controlling type of role that you've fallen into. So I thank you, the listeners of the podcast, for the little bit of encouraging word that I get every now and then to keep doing this, because if that could have that impact from a friend, and it could rekindle the both of us, because she was consumed with caring for her husband, and I can get out of balance sometimes, and I've been quite committed to the things that I'm doing and have lost touch with her. And so I thank you all for that, and I thank her for her brave decision. Now, having said that, I'm going to shift into our guest. I mean, we're 8 or 9 minutes into this podcast, and I haven't even mentioned our guest. So I think it's time to do so, and I'm excited for you, as you're about to hear from a true innovator in the industry of sharing content and telling stories and connecting people with resources and experts and professionals that are out there in the space of dementia and Alzheimer's care. And surreptitiously, believe me, as I say in comedy, if something's really funny, I'm like, this is a true story, because I'm not that good a comic. This is just dumb luck, because I'm not that good of a planner. We recorded this podcast on a Sunday morning, made a little opening joke about orientation, because we had our time zones and our days wrong, but we got it. And we were able to talk about launching this podcast episode on January 10th. They come out on Fridays, remember, because, you know, we want to give caregivers something to look forward to on Fridays. TGIF, yeah, right. But anyway, she is launching a new initiative, and why am I stumbling around this? Why am I beating around the bush, as they say? Our guest today on the podcast is Laurie LeBay of Alzheimer's Speaks. And she is today, as this podcast is being launched, or some time in the past for those of you that are playing catch up. She is launching a new content type of sharing of short stories called Dementia Quick Tips, Things No One Told Me. Compliments of Lori LeBay. There you go. Long opening, and I mess up your name, Lori. Sorry. On AlzheimersSpeaks.com. And I think you'll be quite impressed by how many people Lori LeBay is reaching. So please welcome me, or join me in welcoming Lori LeBay.
Good morning, Lori. Thank you for doing this. Thanks for being on the Caregivers Podcast.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Lon. Thanks for asking me to come on the show.
Yep. Well, I'm excited as well. I think in all fairness, we should probably start doing a BIMS on one another. We had wrong dates, wrong time zones, but here we are, right?
Yep. Life's confusing sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and we can talk about that a little bit. I know that I've had some professional friends in the speaking and consulting industry, and also in my personal life, that have had health scares that caused them thinking about, you know, dementia and other folks that are having actual signs and symptoms that they're denying. So it's a full circle. But before I get off the beaten path, here at the Center of Caregivers, I say to everyone, honor yourself as you care for others. So before we share with others, Lori, I would like you to please honor yourself and your mission and your message. Tell us where we can find you, and whatever you want to promote, please go right ahead and do it, and let's get started.
Well, great. Thanks for that opportunity. I have a company called Alzheimer's Speaks, and it's all about raising everyone's voice, because I think we're in this together. And I actually started that company in honor of my mother, who lived with dementia for 30 years, because she taught me so many beautiful life lessons. And, you know, I found so many wonderful resources, and I thought, well, I can't keep these to myself. I have to be able to share those. So we have a blog. We have a radio show that we do. We have dementia chats, which are video conversations where I facilitate a conversation with a panel of the true experts, those living with dementia. We've done all different types of projects, and actually January 10th here, we're going to be launching a new one called Dementia Quick Tips, which will be short video vignettes of all the things I wish somebody would have told me when I stepped into this space. And so people can find all that information out at AlzheimersSpeaks.com. That's got two S's in the middle, AlzheimersSpeaks.com.
Yeah, you're the content that you share, I mean, the quality is impeccable, but the volume is just amazing. I mean, anybody that has some fear, some doubt, or just some curiosity, or wants to get, you know, a virtual companion, really needs to find AlzheimersSpeaks.com. I know I've known of and about you for years, and we've met upon the occasion at a conference here and there, and I'm excited about this morning, partially because of what you just said. You went through this with your mom for 30 years, and pretty much when you guys started your journey, there was nothing like this. There was nothing at all.
There was nothing. You're right. Absolutely nothing. And the sad part is in a lot of ways, things haven't changed, but in a lot of ways, there's been some major changes, but we still have leaps and bounds to go. You know, people are still talking about not being pointed to resources or given hope upon diagnosis and having to find this information themselves. And so that's what's so wonderful about what you're doing, what I'm doing, and what so many others are out there promoting and doing, is trying to connect people.
Yeah, and the need for it is so immense. I mean, but, you know, my focus is on caregivers in general, but, you know, the issue of dementia, early onset in particular, Alzheimer's, you know, none of it is tied up into a nice, you know, neat little bow. There's not even a perfect name for the whole phenomenon, or an understanding of what any like Alzheimer's doesn't mean dementia. It's got a more focused, you know, there, and to get that understanding, it's very difficult. So when I get to talk to an expert like yourself, I really look forward to it. Now with your mom, how did you first know? I mean, 30 years, how did it first start?
You know, it was a little thing. She pulled back on her social activities. She put together a 3-ring binder for her work that she carried back and forth. She was a proofreader for Deluxe Check, and she was scared to death she was going to get fired, because she would just stall out and be lost at a job she had done for years. And so that was, you know, she just started adapting to things. She pulled back from driving at night or going someplace alone. She stopped being able to use the vacuum cleaner, the dishwasher, the microwave. You know, the phone would ring and she didn't know really what it was, or she'd hold it upside down if she was able to figure out it was the phone. And probably the one that I think it sounds silly that slapped us in the face the most, and it was very subtle, yet really impactful, because we could make up excuses for all the other things. Oh, she isn't feeling good. She's not up to cooking or cleaning or whatever it was. But she was fanatic about the TV had to be on channel 4, 24/7. Huh. And what we found out was that's how she told time of day. Because back then they didn't change the programming. The anchors were all the same at a certain time. But that's how she told time of day.
Yeah, and not specific time, but like the 30-minute block of this show, then this program kind of thing.
Yep, the routine, lunch, dinner.
Gotcha.
Yep, that time, it was absolutely fascinating. And through this whole process, I found it really fascinating because, you know, what it taught me is life is about adaption. So like you had mentioned, well, you don't do specifically dementia. There's so much overlap. It's all about adaption. I don't care what your circumstances is. I don't care how old you are. It's all about adapting to life. As we change and as, you know, our environment changes, the people in our life change, it's just constant. And yet when a chronic illness hits, we just, like, you know, get stuck in the mud if we don't want to move. And we have this fear and this denial. And, you know, we don't want things to change. We want things the way they've always been. You know, again, for me, that was another huge lesson, which I call freeze framing, that I didn't even know I was doing until it was quite a ways into the disease. And I was digging through this big, huge bin of pictures that never got into folders and things. And I ran across this picture of my wedding day, and it was a picture of my mom, my dad, and I. And I looked at this picture, and of course, you know, you look at a picture, you start reminiscing, and I'm thinking, oh, I remember when Tom and I called my folks and told them we were getting married. We were thinking we were going to have this small little wedding in the backyard. And we tell my folks, they're all excited, hang up the phone. 20 minutes later, my mom calls back with the hall, the menu, and the church. And I remember looking at Tom going, oh my gosh, this isn't going to be a small wedding. And yet I loved that about my mom, because she loved celebrating life. You know, I told this story out in Jersey, and someone said, oh, I would have hated that. My mom did that, you know. But that was the essence of my mom. And then I looked at the picture again, and I thought, how unfair of me to still expect her to be that person when everything's changed. My dad's dead, my mom's got dementia, and I'm divorced. And that just slapped me in the face going, wow, I didn't even know I was doing this, but I had that emotional need for her to be who she had always been to me at kind of her pinnacle state, you know, and yet I sure as heck wasn't the person I had been.
Yeah.
I had changed.
Yeah. when you were talking about your wedding, you know, I got married in August after being single dad for 20 years. And, I literally, when I asked Vicki to marry me, I said, will you marry me in a small intimate wedding consisting of no more than 10 people? And, I mean, that was how I proposed, and she accepted, but that quickly changed. And putting that together is tremendous, and it's a testimony to what your mom's capabilities were at the time and to the sort of unreasonable standard that you emotionally were holding your relationship to. You know, life does change. It's about adapting, and some of these things are, you know, finger quotes normal. Like I just had the conversation the other day, you know, about what I do in a day versus what I used to do in a day from a physical standpoint. And it's, you know, it's nowhere near the same. And you know, so many words came up. One you kept saying was denial. And, one of the things that I talk about, and maybe it's not the right way, is I talk about celebrating the decline, not that we're happy that someone has declined, but when we see a next stage or a next step, we don't celebrate where they are, but we should celebrate our awareness as we move into that, so that we can accept the changes that we need to have and allow others, whether they be experts, neighbors, family members, to step in and help. So I applaud all of this great information and awareness that you're sharing and the way you're sharing it.
Well, thank you. You know, I was looking over, you know, some of the information you had sent me about the caregiver distortions and the scale that you have. And I find it fascinating. And there's so many things on there that people don't think about, you know, because we just get wrapped up in the whirlwind of it all and the responsibility. And so I think it's so helpful for people to really look, you know, at your scale of, you know, from going to grief to joy, you know, I mean, who doesn't want to be at the other end of this whole thing?
Yeah.
And it is possible, and it's so freeing, and you have more energy, you have more time to focus on what you really want in life instead of letting the disease, you know, and the chronic illness take over and strip you from the life you've always wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we do early on that is a trap for ourselves is that, you know, we love these folks, and I see it in professional caregivers as well. You know, sometimes it's very hard. We joked at the beginning about a BIMS. Now, you know, a BIMS is a very quick way of assessing somebody's level of cognition. And it's important that that tool be utilized objectively in the same way over and over again, because even professional caregivers slip into this cheerleading capacity that they have empathy for the person they're caring for. And sometimes it's very hard to accept what the reality of it is. But the sooner you can start doing that, get through awareness, you can start finding what the positives that are left in a rational, practical way instead of focusing on the loss. So when did you go from being a personal family caregiver to being a professional caregiver in the sense that you launched your mission here, your Alzheimer's Speaks website and your radio show?
Well, that, you know, I stepped into the space in July of 2009, and I started with a blog, and I was actually encouraged. I was in residential real estate for 25 years, identified the senior market before anyone knew we had a senior market, and was just really working on trying to get families and professionals to do the right thing. And through working with a lot of the senior communities, they were actually the ones that said, your story has to be told. And I, to be honest, I wasn't sure if that was really why they wanted me to do that or if they were just tired of my stories. but they were pretty persistent. And so I thought, okay, I got nothing to lose. I'll dip my toe in the water. And I was shocked that my stories resonated with people around the world. And so I decided to make a commitment, and my commitment was, to me, it was pretty bold and pretty scary, but I thought if I'm going to do this, this is the only way I can do it. And so my commitment was I refused to work in a broken system. And I really felt even in 2009, just 10 years ago, our system was still very, very broken. I don't think we really saw big strides and change until really the last 5 years in terms of people feeling comfortable even having a conversation, you know, about dementia and kind of coming out of the closet, because it's still so hidden by many. And then from the blog, you know, I started the Memory Cafe in Roseville, which is believed to be the first in the U.S., along with the radio show. And then in 2012, I decided I needed to expand and really raise the voice of those living with dementia. So I started the Dementia Chat videos. And then in 2013, we rolled out the first dementia-friendly community. And that was in Wisconsin with the Lutheran Home Association. And that was just fascinating to do, because we were told in each and every step of things that I've done, I've been told you can't do it. It won't work. And I just thought, you know, I have this philosophy of kicking perfection to the curb, and I truly believe progress is better than perfection. Just try. I don't want to go that way. Not trying.
I had a recent podcast with the Shut Up Sisters. They wrote a book, Shut Up About Your Perfect Kids, and they have a mission, the imperfection mission. And, you know, I used to say perfection is defection. You know, if you can't do anything until it's perfect, then you're really withdrawing from whatever it is you're trying to do. So I really applaud that. And hey, let's face it. I have immense respect for what you're doing, just from the nuts and bolts of it, the branding of it, what have you. This is a difficult message to get out, and you have to have good content, good branding, persistence to find people out there. Because if they feel there's a touch of self-help, they're going to pull away. The caregiver personality, I'm saying. So you've found a way to get an audience, to get people to benefit from what you're doing, to get recognition like Oprah. In 2018, she named you as a health hero. Yeah, folks, that's Oprah I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Maria Shriver identified your work. I mean, you're making a difference out there, Laurie. You're making a huge difference.
Well, it's funny because people go like, you know, how did that happen? And I'm like, I don't know. I've not spent a dime in advertising. I just believe everybody has an authentic voice and it should be used. And I think it's asinine that we don't have a societal attitude of sharing our knowledge, you know. And actually, I had a conversation with Mark Wortman when he was the executive director of Alzheimer's Disease International. And I remember talking to him going, Mark, I think I have to move. I don't think I can do this here in the U.S. And he's like, well, he starts laughing. He's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, people are not collaborative. Everybody is so proprietary and, you know, they just don't want to work together. And he just burst out laughing. He's like, Lori, you don't understand why that is. And I'm like, I don't have a clue. And he says, Lori, you know, we're not perfect over here in Europe either. He said, but we have a mentality of social good and we do what's best for everyone. You know, it's just kind of taking that higher ground. He said, America was started by being independent. And that just hit me really hard, because I still think as much as we've poked some holes in the silos, I think they still exist. And
absolutely.
And some of the collaborations that I see in my mind, and this might offend some people, but I think that they are not true collaborations. People are positioning themselves because they feel like they have to be there, but not because they really want to be a team member. Yeah. And I think that that's a big, big mistake.
Well, our strengths are our weaknesses, both as an individual and as an economy and a society. And we were the trailblazers and independent and entrepreneurial, and you know, capitalists and all of that. It's given us wonderful opportunities in certain regards, but you're absolutely right. There are some folks out there that I, well, they're
people are in it for different reasons.
Yeah, I just really want to pick my spots. And I thank you, by the way, for calling out my caregiver distortions and the emotional scale, because there's a lot of science and a lot of psychology to what I'm doing, and the blessing and the curse, our strengths or our weaknesses, is that, you know, as a speaker anyway, I'm humor based, and occasionally I try it on the podcast, but and it's what makes people want me to take the stage. It's why people will listen to me, but it's also why sometimes they will quickly discount the message. Oh, he's just some guy goofing around. No, there's, that's my method, but there's some seriousness to this. And I've seen a lot of folks out there that their method is monetary, period. And, it frustrates me greatly, but, you know, if people like you and I stay in this space and just keep on, you know, shouldering in and forging out our lane, others will continue to find us. But you're right. The greater world is way ahead of where we are. They have whole villages dedicated to, you know, to serving these folks, and they're phenomenal.
Well, and they have the government backing them and funding them. And, you know, we have to do things different here. And, you know, I tell my audiences, and they look at me really funny, but I say, you know, my mom's disease was the biggest gift I'll ever receive in my life, because it taught me so many beautiful lessons to be a better human being. Because I think anything that you learn with dementia is applicable for all of life. And I also believe that dementia is here to kind of slap us in the face and say, you know what, you guys have really gotten this wrong, and you need to start working together. So you're not going to have money, you're not going to have staff, you know, and all these things have kind of come at us where it's forcing collaboration, because there isn't the money, there isn't the staff, there isn't the time. And I think people are starting to see the benefit of, we can push together faster, deliver better services. We're not going to run out of clients by any stretch, because the need is so great. And I think most people are probably like me. You know, everybody learns a little different, and different voices, you know, and different methods, you'll pick up different things because you're in a different emotional state. And I think that's been undervalued, a lot. And I think people are starting to realize not to be afraid of the competition, not to be as afraid to lift another resource up, because that makes you look good to your clients, and they're going to be more grateful, you know, and none of us serve everybody. That's just a ridiculous concept, I think, to even put in a bucket. But getting back to your emotional scale, one of the things that I really like with that, and I'm a storyteller, you know, just I think like you are, when I get on stage. And one of the stories that I think that I tell that kind of shocks people a little bit, but it's so basic, really aligns very beautifully with your emotional scale, and is called Tears, Fears, and Joy. And, you know, we spend so much time in our tear period, which is, you know, the grief, the loss, and we get stuck in the mud. And, you know, it's good to grieve, but you don't want to spend too much time there either, you know, where it upsets, you know, your lifestyle and your life in general. So it's healthy to grieve. And so for me, what I figured out one day was I turned grief into a gift. And I did it by realizing that I couldn't have great grief without first having great love. And so many people never have that to begin with. And that kind of helped me up by my bootstraps and not spend so much time, you know, thinking about all the things that were and focusing on all the things that aren't anymore. The fears, I think, where care partners get stuck in too, is especially if you're a personality A, You want to have so many multiple, you know, backup plans. And so you think about all these things that could happen because somebody said they could happen. But, you know, how much time have we all spent worrying about things that have never come to be? And I think the mentor teaches us that, you know, it's more important to be flexible and fluid and spontaneous and use the tools and the knowledge and the time and the skill set and the energy we have in the moment that it actually happens. And know that we are always adapting and always changing. And so not being so scared of the future. And when I ask my audience, what do they want of those three things, tears, fears, or joy, everybody says they want joy. And what I point out was that you can't find joy or create joy if you're not living in the current moment. So living in the past with all that grief and tears, or living in the future, projecting all that could come and is scary, we're missing that moment of that joy and appreciation, that empowerment, that passion for life. And it might look really different, but it doesn't make any difference because those joyful moments, they're like embedded in our heart and they don't go away. And they don't have to be big and flashy anymore. You're past that.
Well, and you have to start working on what memory you're going to have. I mean, memories are flawed and they can be positive or they can be negative. And I'm going to try. We talked a little bit earlier before we got started about the flow of being on the phone. So I don't want to go on too long about this, but I want to hit a few points of what you just said. I've had several friends, you know, that have recently suffered losses of pets. And sometimes their emotions seem almost greater than an emotion for a lost loved one. And the part of the reason for that is that they have no, it's clear the relationship with the pet, whereas sometimes we have a lot of unfinished business with loved ones or family members. And you had said great grief, great love. I mean, Peter Rosenberger had said that one of the number one goals that you should have as a caregiver, it may sound harsh, but your goal is to survive this first and foremost. You should want to be standing at the side of a grave with unclenched fists and an open heart by the time you go through all this, instead of picking up regret and remorse along the way. So I think that your path to joy is a very valuable lesson to teach folks. One thing that I try and focus on the podcast and in my speaking is a circular relationship of respect and no competition between professional and personal family caregivers. I call it pro-per relationships, where professional and personal caregivers are on the same team. And a sideline of what our country needs to go through can get there through the kind of education and voice that you're sharing is that, you know, we're a very competitive environment in society, but we're also a very litigious one. And some of the strategies that could benefit our loved ones and ourselves have to have a more open perspective along those lines. And we can get that through education.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. In fact, when I entered the professional speaking world, I was told I had to pick a lane. I couldn't talk with people with dementia. I couldn't talk with families. I couldn't talk with professionals. I couldn't talk with specifically medical professionals. You know, I had to pick a lane. Which group was I going to be? And my philosophy is, you know what, we are never, ever going to shift our dementia care culture if we don't talk to everybody, because everybody affects everything. And if we don't understand that, if we don't see that, you know, we're holding back. And even like when I will go out and maybe do a talk for maybe staff training, and then I'll do a family group, you know, they'll say, oh, no, you know, we don't like to mix them up. And I'm like, there is so much to be learned from one another. But there's this distrust of, oh, what if my staff say something inappropriate, or what if our family, who really, you know, is having a tough time with us right now, shows up? And, you know, that can be handled through good facilitation and can become a really positive thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I you know, that's what my message to Fender of Caregivers is all about. I've been approached by attorneys that want me to give expert testimony on behalf of, you know, families that feel as though they've been let down, and also on the side of providers that have been, you know, because, you know, from a branding standpoint, I've really done a terrible job of getting people to understand what I'm about. I'm in that space between a professional and a personal family caregiver where we can, you know, standardize our expectations of one another. I speak in acronyms. I have REAP to sow, reveal expectations, exceed promises, to serve others well. I'm very comfortable in that space of expectation versus our ability to meet those expectations. And it's something that a lot of places are not good at. When I go to do my play, Defending the Caregiver, sometimes in a assisted living community or a retirement community, I'll have them from a marketing standpoint say to me, oh, we only want our prospects here. I'm like, but what about the people that live here and visit every day? And, you know, no, we want this to be a marketing thing. And I'm like, no, this should be I've actually turned engagements down because they've been too narrowly defined, and I didn't want to be in that pressure cooker environment.
I've done the same. It's what we've always done it this way. This is the way we've always done it. And that's really the only answer sometimes they'll give. And what they don't understand, I think often from a professional standpoint, is, you know, we all, and I think this is hilarious, but I have this term called the reaction equation. And I believe we all react using this equation. And it's really simple. But when you are a professional, many times, and when you're a family member dealing, you know, with a chronic illness, a lot of times the disease or the illness is blamed for everything that was just that person's personality to begin with, way before the disease ever came. But the reaction equation is really simple. It is our current attitude plus our past experiences create our perceptions, and our perceptions trigger our responses. And, you know, we have to start changing our verbiage, because, you know, when we call things behaviors, that's not a good thing. That's really demeaning. And, you know, there's so many words that we need to be more conscious of. We have to look at commonalities versus differences. But that's not how things have been developed in most companies, or even in life. We categorize everything, and categories are fine to a point, but I use kind of the memory cafe as an example. Memory cafes, for people who don't know, are for people living with a form of dementia and their care partners, usually early to mid state. And dementia brings the group together, but it takes a back seat because it's about camaraderie. It's about building relationships. It's about learning from one another. It's about empowering one another. And facilitators, many times, and professionals jump in and think they have to answer anything when they have the expertise in the room right there. And the first question should be, how have you handled that? And ask the room before we jump in and think we know it all. We don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just one more thing on these expectations is that there is a fiscal reality to the professional side of things, to the senior living or to dementia care, that these folks have to have a certain number of staff. They have to pay them well. They have to treat them well. They have to keep the lights on, so to speak. The pressures of you know, growing your occupancy and growing your reputation is such that you also have no choice but to grow those expectations. In order to get folks to say, yes, you're who I want to work with, you have to unintentionally create unrealistic expectations. And it's almost a pattern for failure. I don't mean as any individual operator. I mean as an industry. You know, in order to compete against the guy next door, you've got to promise more than the guy next door is promising, and then you can't keep those promises. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, but don't you think sometimes we're promising the wrong thing?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't think the industry, and I mean, it's gotten, I mean, everyone's budgets are slashed from, you know, from state and federal to, you know, just funding in general, in terms of what they can charge because of the amount of competition. But to me, one of the simplest things is missing, and that's the relationship.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody's gotten scripted. And so, you know, one of the things I encourage companies to do, and I think families need to do this too, is to communicate. And don't always communicate the negative. You know, a lot of times communities will only call when they screwed up on a med, somebody got hurt, or something's missing. Those aren't big trust builders. And then they're like, okay, you know, we'll communicate every Friday or every, you know, second Friday or whatever it is. At 10 o'clock, I'm going to call so-and-so, and I'm like, can't do it. Not going to work. Well, why not?
Yeah.
If I'm telling positive, I said, because you've become routine. You've become scripted. You've just, you know, popped your own bubble because it's not authentic. It's forced. It's a task.
Yeah.
And we have to get back to that authentic voice. We have to get back to being creative. We have to get back to allowing our staff to fail in terms of trying things, you know, and then use it as a learning lesson. But people are afraid, you know, that they're going to get sued. People are afraid that they're going to get fired, you know, but it's because of the way it's framed and the way they're not educating families. You know, you can take that enemy of the state, which a lot of times can be a family member, and they don't understand why a family is coming in so strong and fierce, and bottom line, you know, when they first place somebody, it's because they want it to be perfect. And so they're going to go in looking to fix problems. Well, you're going to find what you're looking for. So they find problems. So that's what they keep bringing up, because there's not the trust. And, you know, you can take that enemy of the state and turn them into a total frenemy. And they can be your raving fan. But we have
Absolutely.
To slow down. We have to pace things. And we have to meet not only the client, but we have to meet the family and the staff's emotional needs. And I think that is really what's missing. And, you know, I have a thing called the hybrid CAR e-giver, which is caregiver. And the CAR stands for conscious awakening of relationships. And the e-giver is about the emotional giving. And we've gotten so task-oriented, both as family and as staff, that we've forgotten why we're there.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. I mean, that's why you're on the podcast instead of just me going alone with it. I mean, it's absolutely, it's a difficult space to get to because of all the external forces that are out there. I did a podcast not long ago with Doug Wojcicki with Sorry Works. He's a disclosure trainer, and he teaches on, you know, what to do after something negative has occurred. But he also, by proxy of being in front of these folks, teaches how to build those relationships so that something negative doesn't occur. And it's so powerful to role play, not script, how to have these conversations, because people are very afraid of it. And one of the things I've always abhorred about, you know, caring, the industry of caring for others, is the minute something is wrong, we figure out who we're going to blame, who we're going to fire, who we're going to get rid of. Well, I'd ask, who are you going to replace that person with? You know, negative things happen in all aspects of our lives. It's how we handle them and how we learn from them. And it can't be, as you had said before, it can't be scripted or regimented or routine. It has to be genuine, and it has to be practiced as well. I try and do a lot of role playing with the folks that I work with, and it is very helpful. You know, you can't give the Sermon on the Mount, so to speak. By the time anxiety and tension and emotions are running high, that's not the time to try and have a candid conversation. You have to have them day in and day out and in real time before you get up on that mountain.
Very true. And people have to share what's working and what's not, instead of being embarrassed or keeping it a secret. you know, and I think that that is critical, and not only with staff, but with families. You know, there's families are a wealth of information, and let's not forget the person with dementia. You know, depending on where they are in the progression, they are still a wealth of information, but sometimes we have to learn to communicate differently. We have to learn about multisensory interaction. We have to learn about reading the nonverbals. We've taken all that stuff for granted, and actually people with dementia will be the first to tell you, you know, when they'll explain, hey, if you're going to talk to me, look me square in the eye, because I need to see your face, because you know what? I didn't know that I was reading lips and all these nonverbals, but I sure as heck know when they're missing. When you're going one way, yelling at me to go grab my coat out of the closet, and I can't put anything together, you know? And so there's so much in life we've taken for granted, and I think dementia is really here to elevate that and to show us that there's a cleaner, kinder, better way to live and communicate and lift one another up.
Yeah. There's a lot of experts, so I won't start naming any specific name for fear that I'll leave others out or choose one over another. But the reality is, like you said, there's so much to be learned on the professional side from the families and on both sides from the person that is going through it. I spoke with Brian LeBlanc recently, and what an unbelievable experience that is, to as clearly and as well as he spoke during the hour in the podcast. As soon as the podcast was over, he pointed out to me, he goes, listen, any other day, I might not have been able to do 2 minutes of this. And you have to look for and embrace those moments. And when you bring so much stress and tension and worry into it, those moments are harder to find because we can't slow down and appreciate them. The storytelling side, I won't tell the story. I mean, but I tell a story about a relationship I had with a man named Garfield and how I was trying to defend Garfield. And what I ended up doing was I didn't want the world to disrespect Garfield, but in the process of defending him and out of an abundance of love and caution, I ended up disregarding Garfield because I was advocating so strongly for him that I wasn't listening to him.
Wow. Yep. And it happens. It happens to all of us. And even when we're conscious of it, it can still happen when, you know, we get pulled back into the race of life. And, you know, I think it's so important that we are able to recognize it, forgive ourselves, and embrace the next opportunity that we have to do better.
The irony of it is what we do to ourselves as a society. You know, we go back to this earlier comment about the nature of, you know, who started the United States, is that let's talk about how the whole concept of assisted living was started. It was supposed to be a shared risk environment. And because of, you know, certain for-profit mentalities, where they were taking advantage of that quote-unquote, finger-quote, safety, they went too far in one direction, so regulation comes in. So then it's in some ways not different than other models that were out there because we're not having these good, you know, middle ground conversations and expectations of one another. So what's next for, you've got your dementia quick tips coming out. I don't want to keep you all day here, although I think we could probably do this all day. what is dementia quick tips about, and it launches when?
January 10th. And in fact, I just did an introduction to what they're going to be about in a short little video. But basically, they're going to be short vignettes, video vignettes. It'll probably be, you know, 1 to 3 minutes long on all the little things I wish someone would have told me that would have made my journey easier if somebody would have just shared their knowledge, just shared what they learned. Because everybody learns things on this journey. And everybody, you know, interprets it a little bit different. So you and I could learn the exact same thing, but we're gonna tell somebody in different words, in different ways, with different inflections. One might use humor, one, you know, might write something, one might do a video. I mean, there's so many different ways to communicate. And I just want to, you know, I've learned so many things and I feel so blessed on this journey that I've been on. And I just want to, again, honor my mom and all her teachings and all the other fabulous people, the families, the professionals that I've learned things with that have, you know, collaborated with me or even come up and, you know, kind of been against me and told me I couldn't do it. You know, all those things were beneficial. But it's all about changing our mindset to one of a heart set. And I think it's really, if we can change the perceptions, we can change the world.
I say you have so many good turns of phrase, something I try and pride myself on, but I will give you the you know, the honor of taking that trophy home. There's so many good turns of phrase that you share that they almost get missed. And I would encourage everybody that's listening to this podcast to go back and listen to it again, because these are some things that you can commit to your own sort of memory as like little mantras that you can pull out for yourself and repeat to yourself. Now, one of the things I like to play around with is you might be a caregiver if statements. And I have one for you, Lori, but I'd like to give you a shot to see if you have one for yourself.
Well, you might be a caregiver. Gosh, there's so many. I do a thing called you might be in denial or a burnt out caregiver.
right.
But, you know, if you don't know who you are anymore.
Yeah.
I think so many of us, and I know it happened to me with my dad with brain cancer, my mom with dementia. I lost myself. I grew into a new person, and that was, you know, my primary role. That's who everybody saw me as, was kind of the you can call it a caregiver, you can call it a fixer, you can call it whatever you want. But as that journey changed, like when my dad died, I literally didn't know who I was. I literally didn't know what I liked to do. People are like, well, what do you like to do? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't asked myself that question in so many years because I was too busy being a mom, a wife, you know, working full time, volunteering, caring for my folks, that I lost myself. But I think it's so important for people to keep their connections and really truly understand the importance and the brilliance of your friendships and feeding your own soul. And I pushed that away for many, many years. And I had a great group of girlfriends that would not give up on me. And one day they called and said, hey, Lori, come on for coffee. And I was so sick and tired of them wanting me to do something else. I mean, that was really my attitude. That's how I looked at life. It was just one more thing to do. And I laugh at how I stated this, but I said, okay, I'll give you 10 minutes. You know, like I'm the queen bee, roll out the red carpet, here I come. And the only reason I agreed to go was to get them off my back. That was when I said yes, that's why I did. And I showed up for coffee with these wonderful women, and we laughed and we cried for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it was at that moment, I still get emotional. It was at that moment I realized how empty my soul was.
Yeah.
That you're giving so much, but you don't even know it's happened until somebody stands up and fights for you and says, come back. And then every week I went. And I laughed and I cried with my friends for 2 hours every week because I realized how important that is and that I can't give good care if I'm not balanced.
Very powerful. Very powerful. I don't want to follow that up with any comments other than to say that, you know, you might be a caregiver if you set out to take care of your mom and you ended up taking care of the the country or the world by sharing this message. And Lori LeBay, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
Well, I think we're all caregivers, and I think that that's something that we also have to shift the perception on. You know, I believe we are caregivers from the moment we're conceived, and people will go, well, how can a baby in a womb give care? But to that I say, how many tummies have you tapped? How many conversations have changed? You know, because there's a baby in the womb, we give and receive care way before anything. We all have that response, that reaction equation happens with everything in life. And so, you know, being a caregiver shouldn't be a state of crisis. It should just be part of who we all are. And we all give care a little bit differently. And that's okay too.
We just started a whole nother podcast now, you and I, about talking about nature versus nurture caregivers. And they have distinct approaches and personality traits. And I think we've seen the personality trait of a nature caregiver here today, Lori. And again, I just want to say thank you for caring and thank you for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's truly been an honor, and keep up the great work that you're doing, Lon.
Okay, folks, so there you have it, another episode of the Caregivers Podcast. Lori has been she was an early innovator in how she shared the message of her story and her mom and the successes as well as the failures and challenges that she faced in caring for her mom. And she's literally reached millions of people with her messages and has been recognized by Dr. Oz, Oprah, Marie Shriver. I mean, she's really providing a great service out there. And I hate to go negative with you all, folks, but you really need to embrace some people, some messages that you get meaning from, and accept their sort of entry into your lives a little bit as a first step. By that, I mean, get on their mailing list, go to their website and sign up and follow their blogs, do what have you. Excuse me. If you're relying solely on things like Facebook or what have you, then you're really being, there's even bigger world out there for you than the one you're getting to see, because they're controlling our ability to communicate. And I just encourage you to listen with a cautious ear to the messages that you're hearing. And when you find someone that you feel confident in and that they're giving you helpful messages, please allow them into your life and share them with other people that might benefit. And as a selfish plug, I would love for you to, you know, give us a 5-star review and share this podcast with people that you know that might benefit from it. We all have unique caregiver stories. I hope you're enjoying hearing some of them here on the podcast. Please share this with others that you think might benefit from these caregiver stories. And I guess that's about it, everyone. Go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.